Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice. We also have Dr. Tim Hayes with us, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Thursday, February the 19th, 2015. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
What a great voice you have, sweetie. It's nice to hear it back. And she says in the background, it's not totally back. But anyway, both of our voices are moving in the right direction. Cleanse time is cleanse time. And so we welcome you to the show. We're glad you're here. We have this privilege of getting to share with you this time, looking at, understanding, and integrating the first century Aramaic idea of forgiveness. And as we integrate that understanding, deeper and deeper levels of the mind get to open, and we get to bypass prejudices that have been built into our structures forever. And each piece of work that one does, you go to the ancient scriptures, it says, from strength to strength. And that's exactly what happens. If someone can be exposed to every thought, to every word involved in every workshop and every tool, be exposed totally, completely, 100% and through it all, then, having built the brain cells involved in doing that, go back to the beginning, and the whole will start a whole new level of comprehension and understanding. And I thought, if someone shared this in the past,
Michael, you just got very faint. You need to put it closer to your mouth or something.
Is that better now?
Yes.
Okay, good. So as Dr. Tim has shared, you know, the 10 years they've been doing a support group and watching repeatedly these 15 videos, and each time you go back to the river, there's a whole new flow of information, a whole new level of understanding. And I say that, you know, from the feedback I've gotten from people, but also from my own personal experience. I often go back and listen to something that I did 35 years ago. And I say to myself, my God, did I understand that back then? And now, hearing what I understood back then, I could add, you know, let's say it's a one-hour video or an hour presentation, I can add another 3 hours of information to that exact same topic. And so the levels of comprehension that happen, and the, you know, when we break down all the walls, what does the whole game look like? And so keep breaking down the walls, keep building the brain cells. It's an awesome project. And I understand that we have a friend who has an event to announce for us. So, Jeannie, would you like to introduce our caller?
Yes, 517, you're on the air.
Well, good afternoon, everyone.
Oh, Rex, how are you, sir?
Awesome. And I do have something that's exciting to share. Brea Joy and Zachary Wallen, our daughter and son-in-law, had a child last night around 7:30, and her name is Shaylee Joy. Shaylee is one word. Shaylee Joy Wallen. She is, well, last night, she's probably more now. I don't know how that works exactly. Sometimes they lose a little bit of weight from the time they're born. But she is 8 pounds, 14 ounces. She's a very big baby and is a natural birth, had the birth at home with midwives. And Mitzi was present, and she's beautiful and alert and healthy and napping. So everything went well. It was a relatively fast birth, especially for the first baby. From the time that she started her labor, more formal hard labor, she was about 5 hours. So that's pretty quick for going through pushing, birthing, and the whole process. So it's pretty amazing. And Brea was a trooper, and Zachary and the whole crew did great. So it was very successful, and appreciate all the love and prayers that our community had been offering and supporting us in, and supporting Brea in and the process of her pregnancy. And it's just exciting and beautiful. Right now, dark hair, blue eyes, and just as crisp and clear. I mean, within minutes, and then I was there a couple hours after the birth. I was staying at a friend's house close by, about a block away. But I came in, and when she opened her eyes from taking a little nap, I mean, just looking right at me, focusing, clear eyes, just it's exciting to see that natural brilliance that we are truly, you know, represented as love, and the brilliance of consciousness of love, you know, and it being represented so clearly there with her and with the whole, you know, scenario. So it's good reminders. It's wonderful. I know Michael and many of us have experienced that recently, actually, quite a few births in our community. And it's just, it's remarkable. You know, Brea is not a real big woman. She's probably 5'5 or so, and relatively small frame. And you know, Zachary's a very big man. He's 6'5", and very muscular. And so to build and have a baby created in her body, and, you know, just the idea of a mother creating an organ just for feeding and nurturing and nourishing the baby. And then that organ is, you know, released along with the birth. And just, it's amazing. I mean, it's so miraculous. That's really what's resonating most in me. And tears of joy, you know, appropriate name for the baby. And that's Brea was born, and she was so happy when I remember catching her at the hospital and, you know, holding her and watching her come out and the whole process. And I remember in moments after her birth, she smiled, and we didn't name her a middle name initially because it was such a large last name, and our last name was Montague Bauer. And she was so joyous, giggling all the time and smiling and laughing, that we just saw her as a joy. And then we formally changed her name to Brea Joy Montague Bauer, not just Brea Montague Bauer. And she named her, they named their daughter after, you know, well, I don't know if it's after anything, but it's interesting that was Journey Shay, our son, and her brothers, her brothers and my son's middle name, Journey Shay Montague Bauer. So Shay Lee Joy Wallen. So that's the story I have up till now. I'm sure there will be many chapters that will unfold, and I appreciate everybody listening so attentively to my sharing and just, you know, welcoming Shaylee into our lives. It's exciting.
That's awesome. Congratulations. And I can hear that there's another dimension sneaking into your awareness that that shifts your focus, and that's pretty cool. It's a sweet space. I know that when Krista Joy was born, and we didn't have a name for her, and it was just like right there, that was it. And she sent me into another dimension. It sounds like you're touching that other dimension a little bit.
Well, it's, for me, Michael, the languaging, and thank you, I agree, the languaging would be a little different for me. It appears to be for me a dimension that's always there, and it's not something I'm going to. It's actually something that I'm resonating inside, and then all of a sudden it's just here, and that's where those emotions, and there's still a little bit of loss that comes in with journey one sometimes, and that was a little piece of that emotion as well. But yes, the dimension of pure love that exists in me as me, that this amazing event and Shaylee coming to our lives resonates in me. Absolutely. It's incredible.
Very cool. Well, congratulations to Brea and Zach, to Mama, Grandma, and to you, Grandpa. That's pretty awesome.
And we're also, we're opting because Grandma and Grandpa Wallen, and we just thought, well, there's going to be four grandmas and grandpas, or two grandmas and, you know, though there's more grandmas because we have great grandmas as well. But we opted to call Mitzi as Oma, which is German for grandma, and I am Opa, which is German for grandpa. So
Cool. Playing
a little bit with words, so Opa and Oma. So it's fun.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you for
awesome, awesome.
It's
fabulous. It's fabulous from my perspective. My mind goes back to Brea. I remember, I think it was probably kindergarten or grade one when I went into the alternative school that she was in and presented the Y work and the forgiveness process to these little kids, and there was Brea, and just to watch her grow into a beautiful young woman and become a mother, it's an amazing, amazing and awesome process, and we join you in your delight, and you know, appreciate you sharing the presence of love of this event in your family that touches all of us and opens that on still another level for each of us. It's awesome.
And it's a wonderful reminder, as you have stated, and Tim and Jeannie and all of us in this work have stated so many different times, it's been a wonderful reminder of who we really are and what we have as a potential for life to be about. And rather than making it about all of the pain and all of the suffering and all the troubles that we have available to our awareness and our focus, we make it about what's really true, what's really real, you know, and as the Course says, the real world, and this is an example of what I would suggest is the real world. It's exciting and wonderful to be a part of.
For sure. For sure.
Thank you, everybody.
Well, we're delighted to be sharing in it. All right, well, you have a blessed day, and we'll keep in touch.
I'm going to listen in on the program. I'm going to go back on mute, though.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Blessings. All right. Well, let's say hello to Dr. Tim and see how that young man is.
I am doing well, thank you. Congratulations to Brea and Zach and Mitzi and Rex. It's delightful. It's a beautiful picture that I got forwarded, which is just a delight to look at. And it...
That's amazing.
Yeah, it resonates in me, all of the memories of my two children being born and the blessing I had of being able to be there for both births, and so it was delightful. I know they're on the way to a lifetime of wonderful shared energy and memories.
Yay.
And other
so
than that,
anything that you're seeing exciting in your world today, patterns to look at, anything in particular on your mind in terms of how we are advancing this forgiveness work on planet Earth?
Well, the theme so far today is, with, you know, patients I was seeing last night and today, the theme is people beating themselves up, people holding on to conclusions in their mind, negative conclusions about themselves and their value, their relative value in the world, and feeling as though they do not deserve to be happy because they made some kind of a mistake or an action in the past, and literally the thing that's been really striking me lately is the power of my mind to create and then weigh me down with negative judgments about myself, and how strong I can hold on to these, even in the face of evidence to the contrary, even in the face of evidence like the fact that I keep breathing and my heart's beating and my existence on this physical plane is a miracle of creation and expression. And I can sweep all of that aside and focus on one or two little things that happened in the past that I judge negatively, and have that be what I focus on in the moment, and have that be what creates my experience in the moment, and how dramatically different that can be from my true nature. And I thought several times during the day, yesterday and this morning, about the caller who was asking for clarification on that lesson from A Course in Miracles, which is a relatively short lesson, as the course lessons go, but has to do with the difference between what actually is and the reality I'm creating in my mind, the world that I create inside my mind with my thoughts and judgments, and how I can literally focus on that and create an experience that's so opposite, it's actually available. So that's what I've been resonating with a lot, and I've had that people in my office doing that. I had somebody in recently who was just, everybody I know that knows this person is happy when they come in the room, wants them to stay longer, really appreciates the way they show up in the world, and yet this person views themselves so negatively. And it's just amazing the prison that we can create with our thoughts and how opposite it can be from our true nature. And it reminds me I was just going to say, it reminds me of how Abraham talks about this and says, here's a guideline for you. When you look at anything or anyone, including yourself, and you have a negative judgment and it doesn't feel good, it feels tight or tense or painful or constricted, the reason it feels that way is because at the very moment you're looking at yourself or someone else or a life situation, Source is looking through your eyes at that same situation, that same person and you, and loving them in a way that you can barely comprehend. And the reason it doesn't feel good is because you're fighting with the source of creation that's trying to express through you. You're taking a position other than the loving nature of all that is. That's my offering.
Cool. Powerful. When you mentioned prison, you know, back years ago when we worked in the prison system, we would, you know, survey and ask questions of prisoners. And I remember one of the pieces of information that kind of shocked me was that most of the respondents in the prison, when they were asked about punishment, said they felt better when they were punished for their wrongdoing. Which, you know, when you think about it, it's just amazing. and how steeped and conditioned the culture is in the penal system. You know, the whole penance idea of you have to do something painful or traumatic in order to make up for what you've done that's painful and traumatic. And it's like, excuse me, folks, did anybody get the energy dynamic of that? We're going to just create more of the same. How about if we do something loving to counterbalance the times we've made our mistakes? What do you suppose that will do to the balance of the energy in the universe? Of course, it's going to shift it in the direction that we want to keep shifting in. So we invite everybody who's listening, if you have challenges in thinking about yourself, that you start to go back and review all the messages that were given about you. You know, we were just talking about Shaylee coming into the world, this awesome active presence of love. If anybody has ever said a word to you that's different than describing you as that, they were in error. They made a mistake. And if you bought their mistake, you made a mistake. It's time to forgive those mistakes. Time to let go of it. Truth about each and every one of us is that we came into the world just exactly the same way as Shaylee Joy did. It's awesome active presence of love, and it's time for us to start to teach our children to refuse the messages that the world gives them that tells them anything different than the truth about themselves. It's time for us to wake up to who we are and to invite those who would deliver to us messages other than the truth of what they are, we are, to look at their errors, to love truth enough to stop and say, wow, what have I done here? And to support the awakening in each of us of the truth of who we are. So that's kind of our project. That's what we're here to do. Any other thoughts about that, Tim?
Well, it brings to mind the case for emotional hygiene. And I mentioned this earlier. I've heard you talk about it a number of different times, that we spend hours and hours and hours learning how to operate our computers, and hours and hours and hours and hundreds of dollars to fix it when it gets a virus, or when it's not operating properly, or the download speeds aren't fast enough. And yet we spend almost no time in mental, emotional hygiene and mental and emotional maintenance. And, you know, the first time I heard you talk about this, of course, I was already a licensed clinical psychologist and had been doing work for years. And I had been surrounded more by people who, you know, in studying for the degrees and the license and everything, I'd been surrounded by people who had a much greater awareness of mental and emotional health concerns and healthy practices. And still, it shocked me to hear you talk about it. It just opened my awareness at another level. And so then, you know, it's why I do all the work I do with the tapping and the breath work and the worksheets and this internet show and the support groups, because I have seen the benefits. It's like, you know, putting money in a savings account. I get the benefit of the money put in there, and then I get the benefit it adds to savings, it gains interest, and it compounds, and it just keeps going. So I was very pleased to see that there's a psychologist who did a TED talk. And those who don't know, TED is TED.com, stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design. And if you go to www.ted.com, you can access thousands of talks of very brilliant minds from around the world on a variety of topics. And this fairly recent talk was put up by a clinical psychologist, and the title of it is The Need for Why We All Need to Practice Emotional First Aid. And that sounds like in a crisis, first aid in a crisis. But he also talks about mental hygiene and how we train ourselves, we train our children at a very young age to brush their teeth and know if they get a cut, they need to clean it out and put a Band-Aid on it, and yet we do almost nothing in the realm of mental and emotional maintenance and hygiene and first aid. And that's how I'm thinking about, I have been thinking about it a long time, what I do. And I do the tapping, and I recommend people do the tapping. I do the worksheets, and I recommend people do the worksheets. I focus on my breathing multiple times every day, and I recommend other people do that. This is just the beginning of keeping my system in a higher level of functioning and removing what doesn't belong there, and then just watching how this gains a momentum for healthier interactions, greater awareness. Now I catch myself being triggered more and more easily and more, you know, earlier in the process than ever before. And it's because of this daily practice. So I'm going to, in tonight's support group, before we get into the Dr. Michael Rice lecture, we're going to watch the 17-minute lecture on why we all need to practice emotional first aid. And
cool.
And so I'll get another dose of that, and if I get some notes from it this time, I'll share them with you tomorrow.
Please do. That would be fabulous. Well, you know, every child, you know, we had Suzanne Tucker shared on the show back last year about a woman who came to one of her workshops and shared that she had stopped punishing her son and that she came from a family tradition of if the child's going to be switched, the child has to go out and cut their own switch. I'm amazed when I tell the story how many people shake their heads and go, yeah, that's what I had to do in my family. I am appalled by how many people are familiar with that as, well, that's just the way you raise a kid, isn't it? What? But in any event, she shared that this particular mother had sent her son out to cut the switch, and the little boy at about 6 years of age came back in and didn't have a switch in his hand because he couldn't reach one on the tree. And so he opened his hand and offered his mother a handful of rocks to throw at him. And, you know, that child at six is already living with post-traumatic stress disorder. Every child, 3-year-old, 5-year-old, 7-year-old, 10-year-old, 15, 20, 50, 70-year-old, who has a power person go off on them in a fit of rage, is now living with post-traumatic stress disorder. They're living with the energetic dynamics of what was pointed at them, and they did not know how to handle or deal with, and so stored it literally holographically in every cell of their structures. And then add to it the insanity that what happens next, and I guess I shouldn't say insanity because it's just the way the energy system works, that gets passed from generation to generation. And we need to get parents to understand that dynamic. And the only way, of course, that a parent can properly discipline their child, and of course the word comes from disciple, means properly taught, is if they're properly taught. And virtually every parent on the planet is suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, we have kids, fortunately, that have been brought up with the tools, and so they're able to do it differently. I watch my my granddaughter, who's now about three and a third years of age, and we were back there a couple of months ago, and it was really neat to watch how, you know, as a three-year-old, she would have a goal, and her goal wasn't being met. And how instead of going into hostility and fear, she was able to maintain that connected space of love. She was still able to be in touch with her sweetness, even though she wasn't getting what she wanted. And, you know, to me, that's just the generational benefit. Can we hit a mute button, Jeannie? We're getting a lot of banging and noise in the background here. To me, that's the generational aspect of people doing their work, in that, you know, if we're not taught the lie that we can do better at getting what we want by beating up on someone, which is in essence the post-traumatic stress disorder of a power person verbally, emotionally, or physically abusing their child to get what they want. If we can bypass that lie and give our children the message that you will maintain the most powerful ability to produce the kind of life you want if you stay connected to love, rather than what I was taught to do, which is, you know, well, I'll go into hostility and see if I can force cooperation. I'll do what my power person did to me. And to undo those dynamics, to me, is such a precious, precious thing. And, you know, I wait with bated breath on the time when a whole generation of children is created on planet Earth who know that they get what they want by staying connected to love. And if they don't get what they want, they've still got what they want, their connection to love. As opposed to get my stuff, I go into rage and manipulation and guilt and grief and pain. To me, that's the essence of the post-traumatic stress disorder that's carried by virtually everyone. And then, of course, we take it to the next level. As a culture, we've made a profession out of this. We take these children who've already got that post-traumatic stress going on, and we convince them that they should go off and become killers. And we enforce a whole other round. I was watching a little while back a video called The Warrior Project, where these military guys that just straight up acknowledge, we were taught in the military to hate people. And, of course, when you think about it, how are you going to go point a gun at somebody's head and kill them if you don't hate, if you don't have that, you know, that sort of thing going on? And so, you know, we've created a, and we pay more dollars for this in this country than anything else on the planet, than educating our children, than feeding our children. We pay more money to teach people to hate and kill. And then we wonder why. And here we are. It was an interesting demonstration at CSL this Sunday morning. I spoke and delivered the message. But before I did, there was a meditation. And the person who did the meditation said, would the six people in this room please stand up? And so six people stand up. And would the four people over there stand up? And finally he got to the point where 22 people were standing. And he said, now everybody look at these 22 people. That's how many veterans today who have killed themselves because of the load they're carrying. It was a really graphic demonstration. 22, and you know, my understanding is that the VA keeps very minimal statistics. The number could be as much as 3 to 4 to 5 times as high as that. But that's the number of people who killed themselves. And that's the extreme of the post-traumatic stress disorder, Tim, for me, that you were talking about with this person who's got this self-loathing. It's all part of the same process in our culture's profession out of, and we pay people highly to do this to each other. It's like, you know, I guess the fish can't see water, so it looks transparent. So this all looks transparent. It looks normal. It looks like, well, you know, of course that's what you do to survive and protect yourself and blah, blah, blah. It's time for us to start to, as a culture, to address the post-traumatic stress disorder
of the 6-year-old, the 10-year-old, the 15-year-old, the 22-year-old, the 54-year-old, the 74-year-old who was taught that they had to go out and get a switch to be beaten. It's time to support them in healing, forgiving that post-traumatic stress that they carry around with them still today. It's time for us to pay back our vets, you know, after the service on Sunday. You know, Michael Coughlin, we've heard from him often as a vet, was kind of in a despondent state and shared with me that there was a young woman that he had worked with in the military who was 26 years of age. And he said, she's probably one of the most beautiful, you know, physically beautiful people that he's ever known. And as a result of her post-traumatic stress disorder, last week she killed herself. And, you know, it's like, who's going to do something about this? You know, we've been conditioned to go on with our busy little lives and our busy little projects and, you know, getting our stuff and My invitation is for everybody to consider, are you willing to stop buying and focusing on working for getting your stuff just a little bit, you know, 10% cut back, and take that 10% of your time, your intelligence, your money, and your energy to create the healing of your own and the people around you, the post-traumatic stress disorder that they carry, because virtually every person in our country is carrying it. That's my offering. I'd love your thoughts on that, Tim.
Well, I'm just 100% agreement, and, you know, to my mind, it ties in with several things we've talked about. One is how much benefit I get when I tithe. It benefits me because I'm spending 10% of my time, intelligence, money, and energy on things that nurture me spiritually, and I cannot separate the spiritual from the physical. And as I'm helping clear up my energy system and keep that loving energy top of mind for me, I get to experience it firsthand more often rather than living in the distracted mind. And then, of course, it benefits those around me because I'm giving of that energy and supporting them. And it makes my world a better place, and it makes my experience of my world a better place. And I have I've seen the benefits that these tools can bring to people who've been in the service, who've been traumatized by either things in the domestic realm or in the military realm, and I am just, I'm honored to be able to extend that every chance I get, and I encourage others to do the same. Because as we've said so many times before here, you don't need to be a licensed clinical psychologist or a doctorate of metaphysics or naturopathy to do a support group, to learn these tools and teach them. And as Susan Darnell was saying so beautifully yesterday, the more she teaches it, the more deeply she learns it and gets to experience it for herself. So it's a very self-wise thing to do, to help others learn to do this for themselves.
Excuse me. Yes, 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 and yes. You certainly got my agreement. And I'll add into it as I offer that little cough. You know, when people enter into the healing process, they want it to be easy, they want it to be fun, they're willing to do it as long as everything is peaceful and, you know, I don't have to deal with anything. But the truth is, what we're inviting people into is not Dr. Feelgood. You know, that 4-year-old who had a parent who, you know, was under the influence of alcohol or drugs and just went off on them is carrying an energy that when at 30 or 50 or 90 they access is going to be painful, and the toxic effects of it are going to take time to process out. You don't take a lifetime of a culture where, you know, abuse is standard, and it's pretty much standard in this culture. I mean, turn the television on and look at the sarcasm that passes as humor. And the word sarcasm means to tear flesh. You look at the flesh tearing that goes on that children are brought up with and brainwashed that this is a natural state of mind. You know, you think about those kids who, you know, they were three when they watched the towers go down over and over and over again, not really able to distinguish that it was all one event repeated, but thinking that it was happening each time. And you look at the trauma that they're carrying. And, you know, it's just time for a major wake-up and for people in mass a direction shift in their lives, because we can create a sane culture that raises sane children with love present in their lives, love in their schools, love in their churches, not guilt and fear and condemnation. You know, you go back and the ancient scriptures are really clear. Fear is a doctrine of man. It's got nothing to do with the truth about the Creator or any religious idea. Fear is a doctrine of men. Men inspire fear to keep others under control. And, you know, it's just time for at least what I hold, for more and more and more people to make an about shift in their lives and start to invest some of their time into that mental emotional hygiene, cleaning up their own individual post-traumatic stress disorder, standing in the willingness to go through it. You know, you've heard my voice since I first got back from our trip and how it's been progressing. This has not been Dr. Feelgood to heal, to allow the body to retrace what's gone on within it is something that happens only as you develop the skill to be able to embrace the energy. And so the willingness to embrace that energy is an important part of the process. And unfortunately, it's not Dr. Feelgood. I wish we could say, oh, yes, well, instantly, in every case, everything's going to be better. But there are going to be layers and levels of processing through emotional trauma, mental trauma, energetic trauma that in some cases can take months to do one of those major pieces of work. And it's just so worth it. And Jeannie just told me that we have several callers on the line. So let's check in with our callers and say hello.
Okay, before I take the first caller, there was someone who just texted me, and they said they have a hard time picking out goals. And how can they possibly cancel goals? That's not normal. And perhaps goals were set too high and needed to be tapered down. They did go on to stand on Xanax since 2008, and that was also a way of life. And that they had been searching for a woman, and they found a girlfriend that they love, and they get her, and she gets them, and all that, but she won't be a part of pills. So is his goal for the pills or the girlfriend? And what does he do about it?
Well, I would agree with your text that canceling goals is not the norm. It's not even taught in our culture. We're taught to set goals, set goals, set goals, set goals. That's why the number one complaint going into doctors is, I have no energy and I'm overstressed. Because every time you set a goal, you create a stress. We are working to make it the norm on the planet that every time you find yourself over the limit on stress, that you start recognizing the way you've created that stress is by the goals that you hold, and you start to cancel those goals. And, you know, the only reason for something like Xanax is I have post-traumatic stress disorder, and I need to start chipping away. You know, when they said to Yeshua,
You know, how many times do we have to forgive to get free of something? Is 7 times enough? His answer in Aramaic was 77 times 70. It means I'm going to have to do an infinite amount of work around this issue until I'm complete with this issue. So I start chipping away at it. And the master plan for how to chip away at a mind based in fear and pain is every time that the mind brings forward, bing, 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 any form of fear or pain, you look at the goal that accesses that, and you cancel that goal, and by canceling it, you collapse the projection that there's the cause of the pain is outside of you, and you get to drop directly into the pain. When you engage in the practice of active present love, and you bring that into the places in you that have pain, then the roots of your pain begin to dissolve. You're right, it's not the norm, but it needs to be. Because if it were, we would have a sane society, and we do not. I love what Mahatma Gandhi said when they asked him what he thought of Western civilization. He said he thought it would be a good idea. And I seriously agree with him. Seriously, seriously, seriously agree with him. And so start chipping away. Start chipping away. Now, from all of the comments that Jeannie just read, there's going to be a huge amount of the building of brain cells and understanding that you're going to do to move through to the other side of this whole situation that you describe. You are not going to get that done today. It is going to be a process. I don't know how long your process will be. It might take you a week of dedicated work. It might take you a month of dedicated work. It might take you a year of dedicated work and maybe 10 years. I don't know. And we say, well, you know, if to get through this trauma, it's going to take me 10 years, why would I bother doing that? Because in 10 years, you're going to be free of your trauma. If you don't do it in 10 years, you're going to have reinforced your trauma and built it into 1,000 other areas of your life. There's work to be done. It's not Dr. Feelgood. It's not easy. It's a process. Engage in your process sooner rather than later, and you'll be out the other side sooner rather than later. You know, I've been working on it. I've shared on the show that, and you can still hear a little bit of the catch in my voice. Unfortunately, I haven't had to mute the phone to cough. But when I was born, my mother had had toxemia for 6 days. They gave her Pitocin for 6 days. They told my father I wasn't going to live through the night because of lung problems. And they started pumping me full of steroids. Saved my life. But I'm still cleaning up the steroids and all of the energies that went around with those birth and early childhood experiences. I've been doing my work for 45 years. I'm not finished. And we've had people say, well, if you're not finished in 45 years, why would I bother? Because if you do your work, there'll come a point where you'll be finished with it. And if you don't, there won't. It'll go on in your world and in your life forever, and it will pass to your future generations. I loved what Jonas Salk said. He said, the best thing we can do is to be good ancestors. A good ancestor takes hold of their own genes and cleans them up. Cleans out the hostility, the fear, the rage, the guilt, and the grief. Handles the post-traumatic stress disorder that's been handed from father to son and mother to daughter for too many generations. It's time to get it done. And that's what we're here to support. So I hope that addresses the text, and let's say hello to a caller.
All right, the first one is area code 970. Is this Brad by chance?
Yep, this is Brad. Hello, everybody.
Hi.
Well, hello, good sir. It's nice to hear your voice.
Well, I just want to start out by saying thank you all for this program. It's really touching on a lot of things that, you know, are very highly, you know, you're stressing the importance of doing the work and how we go about doing it using the tools. I'm now, you know, more effectively able to use those tools because I have more of the willingness to do so.
definitely helps, doesn't it?
Oh, man, it's a world of difference. But like you say, it's not always Dr. Feelgood in doing it because, as you can tell, I'm getting a little emotional at the point right now, but it's because it's a sense of relief in a way, but I know it's not. I don't want to get overconfident in that, but at the same time, I want to give myself credit for what I'm able to do, too.
Yay.
And so it's, like Dr. Tim was saying, he had somebody in his group that didn't have a very good, outlook of himself, and others didn't see that in him. Well, I've also had to be, had a lot of work to do around that. But now I'm starting to understand that, the person I believe myself to be is not the person I'm projecting myself to be to others. I don't see that in me. It's just something I'm holding myself prisoner to because of those thoughts. But now I'm better able to go in there when I have those thoughts and, and change those thoughts and look at it in a positive, loving way and treat myself, with the dignity and respect that I'm not giving myself for, staying with this work and, working through those hard times when I feel like, well, why bother with this? Because I don't instantly feel better about it. But I just keep, plugging away day by day. And, a couple of days ago, I had a very interesting experience that taught me that I'm more willing and able and confident in using these tools to work through and shift, that mind energy and get out of that horrible place that, I want to punish myself for so often. That's part of my PTSD is self-punishment. And, that goes back to my childhood, as, we've talked before, but it was also through my military experience. And then the choices I made, all through the years afterwards. But, I don't want to be prisoner to these things any longer. So I'm learning now how to use those tools appropriately and which one to pick up when and use it. And it's making it finally paying off. It's making a difference in my life. My comment for today. Thank you all.
Awesome. We're delighted to have you on our team and, the people you've presented the work to and the way you move it forward. At whatever level you're doing it currently, I'm not sure, but I know you went into that foray with combat vets and moved it forward. And, to keep it moving in that direction is just so absolutely amazing and awesome. And to recognize, and you make a really good point, that all of this self-deprecation that we've bought into is totally and completely based in errant thinking. It's just mistaken thinking, stinking thinking, thinking without mental hygiene. As we've been talking about the last day or two on the show, well, we wash our bodies every day, but who bothers to wash their minds? And you look at, people who would not interact with a person who hasn't washed their body in a month. But they'll go to a comedy club, so-called comedy club, to anesthetize themselves with alcohol, get drunk, and listen to someone with the filthiest mind on the planet. I mean, literally, if you use the analogy of brushing up against them, you'd have so many disorders and diseases from interacting with this filthy body that hasn't been washed in 10 years. And yet people indiscriminately interact with some of the filthiest minds on the planet. The rage, the guilt, the grief, the pain. And many of them are talking heads on the television set. And we invite them into our homes and our children sit and they listen to them. And it's just, it's so simple, yet such an interesting challenge. But I recognize that it's got to do with what I've been taught to do with my thinking. And as I clean up my thinking, everything changes. Everything moves. And so we're glad you're on the team, sir.
Well, glad to be here. Glad for the support. And so my gratitude and appreciation for everybody that's involved in doing this work, because it does pay off. And, yeah, I get what I need by going to those combat meetings, you know, those PTSD group meetings and associating with those vets. It's not always easy. Sometimes it brings up a lot, and it's very stressful for me to see how some of them are just unwilling to do anything different than what they're doing. And I get pretty stressed at times with COVID. A lot of them won't do anything because they're so afraid of losing their disability, you know, check. They're getting their benefits cut back. And so they just choose to remain where they're at. And I had one tell me Tuesday after the meeting, well, I'm not going to do any more work because it's easier for me just to try to shove it down and pretend that, you know, that I can ignore it.
Yep.
And that was pretty sad to hear him say that. But, you know, it's just not his time yet. And I have to just hold a space of love for him and pray for him and pray for those others there that sometimes, you know, are present a challenge to me, you know, with their derogatory speech and their demeaning speech, you know, how they even talk and feel about others in the group. So I just have to be an example. I usually sit there very quietly and I'm almost stoic. And, you know, I took some advice from Dr. Tim about you have to raise their level of curiosity. So, you know, it was a different approach to try to get them to think I might have something of value, I'm curious about it. So that's been my approach, and it's slow to pay off, but I see that it is in ways now. So I thank you all. I mean, so the knowledge I'm learning, the brain cells I'm building is carrying me, you know, together with the support of Cindy, and what she's willing to do to support me in this is it's all worth it. No
it's
regrets.
Monumental. And the fact that, you know, when you hear this friend who says, I'm just going to quit and shove it all down, you know, that you can language, and I'll just hold a space of love for them. I mean, that's monumental in the world that you've been trained in and that you've come from. That's a monumental gift to give. And chances are that what's getting ready to happen is that this person is getting ready to uncover a whole new layer that to them, just to start to put a finger to it and approach it, is terrifying. And when one person in the space can simply be that space of love, you know, you go back to Yeshua and he's talking to the Pharisees about doing their work. And he says, you Pharisees, you put this load on other people, but you won't put one finger to it. And it will run from putting a finger to it because it's too big and too much for them. And the reason it's too big and too much is they just don't have the tools and they haven't used it. You know, you don't send a 5-year-old into the gym and expect them to lift 1,000 pounds, but send a 5-year-old into the gym and start them with 5 pounds. And there'll come a point where they'll get up there and they'll throw up the 1,000 pounds without sweat. Or maybe with some sweat and some effort, but because they built into it. And so you're building a strength and a space that is going to touch more and more lives, and we're delighted you're in the game with us doing it. It's just awesome. And, of course, we do have teacher training coming up, which, you know, every time I think about teacher training, I see you there. So it might be time to look at how we can arrange that if that's appropriate. And we're out of time, but we love it when you call in, and we appreciate you. And, Dr. Tim, thank you, Jeannie. And our callers, start early in the show tomorrow, push one, and let's have a conversation. Bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. By the way, if you're in Fort Lauderdale, tonight, TSL, our last workshop.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. www.thefergivenessdoctor.com.
Evolving continuously.